The Gospel of Judas. You and I talked a little bit about this when this first came out. Anything new to it, and what's your take on it? Do you think it's a valid gospel?
I have no doubt that it's an authentic ancient text from the 3rd century A.D. It mimics and parallels the Talmud Emmanuel. The Talmud Emmanuel and the Gospel of Judas are both writings of Judas Iscariot. And another interesting thing is that they're both owned and propagated by Switzerland organizations, which is amazing.
That's strange.
That these two texts both are being propagated out of Switzerland, and both of them being the writings of Judas Iscariot. Now, there are those who have come out with their books on the Gospel of Judas, suggesting that this will reform Christianity. My comment is, how in the world can one single person's perspective change Christianity? And the perspective of Judas was obviously clouded. Judas was the treasurer of the 12 apostles. Jesus played with him as a child. Judas was a bully. He used to slug Jesus in the arm, if you want to know about that. You can find out about from the infancy Gospels of Thomas. It talks about Jesus and Judas and their childhood together, and they did not get along. But Jesus loved him as a friend, I'm sure, and he took him aside and tried to teach him. And you know what? A couple of the things of the Gospel of Judas, we could spend the whole 2 hours on the Gospel of Judas. But Jesus, when he took him aside and taught him the mysteries of the universe, you know, the propagators or the promoters of the Gospel of Judas suggest that Jesus took him aside, pointed to a star in the heavens, and says, "That's your star." Well, if Jesus was really trying to compliment Judas, he would have pointed to the sun, not the stars, because the format was the sun, the moon, and the stars. The lowest of the astronomical bodies was the stars. And when he pointed to the stars and said, "That's your place," he was pointing to the lowest degree. If you don't understand that philosophy, go to 1 Corinthians 15 and talk about the levels of heaven that are described in 1 Corinthians 15. The stars is not the highest level. And by the way, when we talk about the pyramid in Bosnia, there was the pyramid of the sun, the pyramid of the moon, and the pyramid of the earth, or the pyramid of the stars. If you go to Bolivia, to Tiwanaku, it had the door to the sun, the door to the moon, the door to the stars. If you go to the Temple of Solomon, it had the room to the sun, the room to the moon, the room to the stars. The entire temple protocol is based on these three different understanding of these three different portions of heaven. And Judas was relegated to the lowest of those. I mean, when we get people who do not understand dogma and do not understand history trying to tell us that this book of Judas will reform the way we view Christ, they have to really do their homework or they're going to be left out. You know, what's happened in the world now is we have a large organization, we won't mention it on the air, who's gone to Egypt and purchased all the sites dealing with Jesus. They happen to be the same organization who's purchased the rights to the Gospel of Judas. And they should stay out of that arena because they're not religious people and they don't know what they're doing.
What do they want to do with all this, Glenn?
Well, it's really a logical economic model. They want to take, they want to have the rights to have a fee from all of the recordings. When I went to Egypt, we went to all the places where Jesus and his parents had been, and we were not allowed to take our cameras in, because this one particular organization had purchased all the film rights, and you had to pay a fee.
I did not know that. Okay.
You had to pay a fee, and it's the same group that owns the Gospel of Judas, which I find to be paradoxical and a little bit angering. So I can't do a film story on the sites in Egypt because this very same organization has learned how to make money off of residual revenues from owning these sites. They actually fund many of the Coptic Christian churches, which are built on the sites of Jesus there in Egypt and around the world, by the way. They own them, much like Kevin Costner wanted to do in Tombstone, and I don't follow him at all. He went to Tombstone, Arizona, and said, "Hey, I'll rebuild your town, but I want to reserve the rights to charge a fee. If I build the town for $2 million, I want to get a residual off all the people that do filming in the town.
Right.
And that's only logical. I mean, it's money, it's capital on your investment. And I can't blame this large organization for doing that. But once again, we've entered in an economic model into a religious eschatology, and it's ruined it, you know.
When did they do this? Has it been over time?
Over a long period of time, but they have done it more certainly than I am alive. Purchasing the rights to a site is very easy in the Islamic world, because prior to the onslaught of oil, the largest income-producing commodity in the Middle East was the sale of artifacts. That's why Egypt.
True, I believe that. Yeah,
is threadbare of its artifacts. They're all in Germany, France, England, and the museums in the West. And they sold their birthright for a mess of pottage, as far as I'm concerned.
Or some wealthy individuals have them in their houses.
You betcha. There's artifacts all over the world that don't belong in private collections, don't belong in private museums, or even in government museums. They should all be returned to Egypt. They belong to the Egyptian people. They belong in the Cairo Museum. They don't make any sense anywhere else.
Well, the earlier reports I saw of the Gospel of Judas claims that he was a friend of Jesus and that he really wasn't a traitor, didn't turn him in. But Christ basically convinced him that, you know, we got to do this, Judas. We got to get this done, so you need to do this for me. Do you think that's accurate? Do you think that's how it happened?
I don't think that's accurate at all. It's very close, but it's not accurate. Jesus told him, you're going to betray me, because he could see the future. Pardon me, that's one of the advantages of being the Son of God. You know, but pardon me, you have a few more advantages than we do as other
Mormons. I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, you get to see things. You get to read the bibliography in large print, you know. But he told him, he says, you'll betray me. And Judas took it very personal as a compliment rather than as a negative thing. You know, there's lots of things about that particular moment in history. Judas was a relative of Annas and Caiaphas. He was a paid informant on the inside of the apostles and reported to Annas and Caiaphas on a regular basis. And when Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, the people that arrested him was not the Roman army or Roman police force. It was a civil police force, a Sanhedrin police force, owned and operated by Annas and Caiaphas. And when Judas kissed him on the cheek, it wasn't because Annas and Caiaphas didn't recognize Jesus or that the police force didn't recognize Jesus. 3 days before he was arrested, Jesus came into town and they were throwing palms in front of his feet. Everybody knew who he was. Everyone knew where he was. Everyone knew what he claimed. The kiss on the cheek had nothing to do with identification. It was a Jewish method of witnessing against. It was like taking the oath in court when you say, are you willing to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God? When you kiss somebody, it was like sealing your testimony against those people. Judas was a paid witness that Jesus was causing an insurrection in the community. That's what the kiss was all about. It was
paid witness, though, but that would make him a traitor.
That is true.